This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
This is the evening edition with Lee Chui Lin and Kelvin Yee. And we were speaking a little bit earlier about the Fund My Home program. We were asking you what your thoughts are, whether or not you would participate in it, and also whether you are team buy or team own, as a lot of our callers earlier were, or whether you're team rent, as Kelvin Yee over here is.
I'm alone.
So far, yes. I don't know. I think maybe people just aren't calling. Your friends just aren't calling. I believe they're out there.
I hope so.
Yeah, but I think so.
But so far, the consensus is that it's better to own a home.
Yes, I think so. That seems to be what has come through. In the meantime, Ahmad Hazim alias has also suggested use the fund from the crowdfunding to buy property along the rail line, convert the semi-Ds into townhouses, and then rent it as transit homes for the B40 household. One of the MOF or relevant government agency could manage this. I agree. I think that's actually a pretty good idea.
And this kind of ties in with what we were speaking about very early in the day about halfway homes.
Yes. Victor says, Fund My Home is a scheme to enable developers to borrow 80% of the possibly inflated value of unsold properties who end up taking the risk. 5 years later, if the property appreciates, the investors who funded the 20% get their cut first. If the price tanks, the one who took the loan will end up with the losses. So that's a succinct, I suppose, summary of where the risk lies. Simon says, regarding home ownership, I agree with a caller earlier that the role of the government is to provide suitable housing for the rakyat who can't afford to buy or choose not to buy, just like what some developed countries, for example, France, etc., do. I do not agree with a statement made by Morning Run presenter Khoo Soo Chuang that people should not be forced into home ownership and the dreaded loan trap. We also have a number of other messages. Kamarun Nizam saying, I always wonder if there should be a market like used cars for houses. I think a caller, Nash, earlier suggests, was it Nash?
I think it was Nash.
I think it might have been Selva who suggested that, saying where you can trade in your house when you grow. This can be complementary to Fund My Home. Secondhand homes can be first homes for somebody. It also frees up some of the space in prime areas, as some will move away from them as they get older. OSK says the simplest explanation on why it's an unfair deal, I would go so far as to call it a scam, is that the buyer bears all downside risk while the investors are shielded and only cash in when there's an upside gain. After 5 years, the buyer is saddled with a bigger debt mortgage and kicked out of their home. Financiers love it. Chun Lim says the solution for me is just to help the developer and the bank from the big picture. And basically the developer can sell it. The property price maintains. That ends up helping the developer, land bank, and previous loan that the bank approved. And then goes on to make some comparisons to Germany.
I guess then if you look at it, if you look at this program from either gains or losses, at the end of the day, if you choose to sell, you don't have a home. If you choose to stay with the program, that might also mean you don't have a home at the end of it.
Yeah, it really depends, I think. I mean, we had two messages there that really ended on either side of the risk spectrum, right? You could see it as, you know what, if my property appreciates, I'm the first in. I was the first one and I'm the one who's going to be getting the money or the home. On the other hand, you can see it as you are bearing all the risks. So I think it really depends on your type of money personality as much as anything else.
And how the market does in the next 5 years.
Yes, that is very true. Moving on though, our next story actually has nothing whatsoever to do with houses and, you know, funding them, because tonight Malaysia is going to be facing its third Universal Periodic Review, or the UPR, by the United Nations Human Rights Council.
Putrajaya is expected to face scrutiny over its pledge to abolish capital punishment, which was the major concern in its last run, and issues involving women such as child marriages and female genital mutilation.
So for a bit of a backgrounder, it's held every 4.5 years, and the UPR is a UNHRC mechanism that was established in 2007 to improve the treatment of human rights in all 193 member states.
The process involves a 3-hour interactive dialogue where UNHRC members will question Malaysia based on reports prepared by the government, UN agencies and the stakeholders' report.
So we first came under the review on February 2009 and consequently accepted 62 of the 103 recommendations issued by the UPR Working Group. However, in 2013's UPR, Malaysia accepted 150 out of the 232 recommendations, but only 113 of those were accepted in full.
And in an apparent change change of tone from the previous government, Putrajaya will actually be hosting a live viewing party of the UPR process at the Foreign Affairs Ministry in Wisma Putra. Some of the guests include media representatives, Suhakam, parliamentarians from Barisan and Pakatan, as well as the coalition of Malaysian NGOs in the UPR process, Komango, and the Malaysian Alliance of Civil Society Organisations in the UPR process, MASCA. MASCA?
Yes, I'm not sure, actually. But I think it's an interesting thing. I'm very, very curious to see what comes out of it. We've been talking a lot recently about the UN and its role in Malaysia in particular, but also in terms of human rights and the conventions, whether we ratify them or not. And I think it is worthwhile, as we said, to have things to aspire towards. And I think with the UPR, it's good to get our report card.
And there's also a lot of things that we haven't really properly addressed yet. For example, caning. So far, it's whatever the courts have decided. So far, it's only been women that have been caned.
Yes. We did, however, have good news about the death penalty. So, yeah, I don't know how we're going to answer those questions. I mean, in theory, we're working towards it. It's something that's been announced. It was something that we celebrated on the show. But how that's actually going to play out is another matter.
Right.
So, in the meantime, while we wait for that, let's cross over now to Rizal Rozan, advocacy officer over at Empower and representative for Komango. That's, as mentioned, the Coalition of Malaysian NGOs. Rizal, thank you for being with us. You were in Geneva last month for Malaysia's UPR pre-session. What typically happens there?
So the purpose of the pre-session is basically for NGOs to have somewhat more formal and direct engagement with the permanent missions in Geneva, and permanent missions meaning the other UN member states representatives. So basically there were around 35 to 40 UN member representatives who attended Malaysia's pre-session. So in this panel session, we basically shared our views on what human rights situation has been for the past 5 years in Malaysia.
And what were the key issues that were highlighted?
What we did during the session was we spoke on the issue of cultural relativism, how universality of human rights is now being questioned in Malaysia. We also spoke about the issue of arbitrary use of the special privileges within the Constitution without using the other article that states that the Constitution should be read in harmony with all the other articles as well. We also spoke about human rights issues regarding women human rights defenders or sexual and gender-based violence against women online. Other key issues that were presented during the session were issues such as the caning of women in Malaysia and how Sharia and civil courts overlap. In terms of procedures, the Sharia court has actually exceeded its mandate, especially on the caning of the two women in Terengganu just recently. The panel also spoke about indigenous people's land rights, racism, signing on to the remaining international treaties that Malaysia have not signed on to, such as the ICERT, the CAT, and all the other treaties, basically.
So having gone through what the key issues are, what can we expect from the review tonight?
What can we expect from the review tonight? Definitely for activists and for people who have been fighting for human rights in Malaysia, there are a few interesting news as well. Just recently, things such as the move towards ending death penalty in Malaysia. There are also positive developments in terms of ICERT itself. But the thing is, situation on the ground, there's always retaliation. So it would be interesting to see whether Malaysia would, as a government, would they defend human rights and promote human rights, or would they retract their statements and then basically cower down to public pressure? Because we also have to understand that the understanding about human rights in Malaysia has been very, very misconstrued for a good few decades where people think that human rights is a Western value or Western principle, whereas it's actually a concept that was made with in agreement of all representatives from all over the world. So even the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, when they were writing the declaration, it was based on the consensus, and that was supposed to be the minimal standard for to achieve dignity for all human in the world. So it would be interesting, and I am hoping from personally that the government of Malaysia would promote and protect human rights, would show itself in a different light, would be more courageous and more honest in its own assessment in the Universal Periodic Review this time, because if not, then what was the change? I'm really worried that that would be the question for the next 5 years.
And which are the issues that other members of the UN states are going to be focusing on when it comes to Malaysia?
So mostly UN member states, they one, they react with their own foreign policy. So usually they have their own interests as well. So for example, if I'm not mistaken, countries like Canada has a foreign policy that respects gender equality, and they have gender budgeting or gender elements when it comes to formulating their policies. So definitely they will give recommendations based on regarding improving the situation of women's rights in Malaysia, and something that that is regarding gender equality in Malaysia. But other things also, they also react with the current development of human rights. So if I'm not mistaken, there are advanced questions that was posed to Malaysia recently, and a lot of these questions were regarding death penalty. Some actually asked about the caning of people of LGBT groups. So yeah, there's a lot of questions, or there's a lot of issues that countries can ask Malaysia. Among the other hot topics that what we can hear from the diplomats themselves, they are also interested in giving recommendation on the Communication Multimedia Act, or anything regarding freedom of expression in Malaysia, such as even the Sedition Act. So it will be very interesting to see how Malaysia responds as well.
Rizal, how much has Malaysia progressed since the last UPR in 2013?
This is a bit tricky because there was a change of government in midst of these 5 years. And actually, most of the change in terms of positioning on certain issues came in right after the change of government. So things such as death penalty, it took a very, very long time for change during the previous government. But the new government is at least willing to talk about it. But on other fronts, the new government has not showed any change. So, for example, things such as the rights of minorities, the rights of migrants or stateless people, the right of LGBT people. Although what I appreciate personally is the new government is more willing to talk about these things and not sweep it under the rug, or not change the topic entirely, or basically cover the issue in misinformation.
And how has participation in the UPR helped to shape or affect the way Malaysia progresses with human rights?
Participation in the UPR definitely helped affect Malaysia's human rights records or progress. Some would disagree with me. Some would say that it has been very slow using the UPR process. But definitely, as the government, they do take into consideration their public image in the international fora. So this is basically one diplomacy 101. No country in the world would like to look bad internationally or in the UN level. Even if the government is the most conservative in the world, but the government would have to compromise at least one or two things when it comes to human rights issues. So change is slowly coming, but change is imminent, basically, using this UPR process. So there are things that I believe through the UPR process got the attention of certain ministries from the previous government. Things such as statelessness. I believe we had two or three thematic discussion on statelessness with the government, where the government sees it as a more pressing issues. And there are also other things such as women's rights. Basically, UPR recommendations regarding women's rights is the top recommendations made by almost all UN member states. So even Malaysia, we receive about 12 or more UPR recommendations regarding women's rights last time around in 2013. And there were a few things that the government actually admitted that they did because of the UPR recommendation.
So this will be the Pakatan government's first UPR review. Do you have any sense of how prepared they are to address Malaysia's stance on human rights on an international platform?
Okay, this is the first UPR for Pakatan Harapan. But I definitely do not have the sense of how prepared they are. I'm actually quite nervous as well because, as I mentioned earlier, there are a lot of differences when it comes to human rights issues, even among the government coalition themselves right now. So this time around, I believe it's Dato Ramlan, who is the Ketua Setia Usaha of the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, and he will be deliberating Malaysia's report when it comes to human rights record for the past 5 years. And he will be probably answering some questions as well. But what we heard a few days ago is even the Department of Islamic Affairs in the Prime Minister's Office, or JAKIM, will be answering a few questions regarding LGBT issues, child marriage, and female genital mutilation. But the ministries are still the same person, the same officers. And with the new directive from the ministries or ministers, it will be interesting to see how they actually answer questions or comments by other UN member states, especially on tough issues such as LGBT and child marriages in Malaysia. But the thing is right now, what's interesting about the new government is we have met them in a private meetings between the minister himself and the members of the Coalition of Malaysian NGOs in the UPR process, or COMENGO. And in this meeting, we were also discussing things about how to monitor UPR recommendations. And it is very heartening to see that the new minister is actually more willing to, not more willing, actually he has the spirit to say that we should monitor the UPR recommendation year by year, and we should use a comprehensive matrix to monitor rather than a very simplistic matrix to monitor this human rights advancement using the UPR process. So we are definitely very excited to see how this monitoring process progresses from now on, but we hope that this promise is carried forward.
Rizal, thank you so much for weighing in. That was Rizal Rozan, a representative of COMENGO, the Coalition of Malaysian NGOs. Rizal is also an advocacy officer over at Empower, and they'll be hosting a UPR viewing party in Bangsa. That's happening at the Co in Bangsa at 8:30 p.m. So you can go check that out. In the meantime, we've got more music coming your way on the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my, BFM 89.9, the business station.